I'm now going to introduce Mary Louise Adams from Resources for Feminist Research, who is going to introduce our speakers.
Thanks. As most of you saw on the flyer, presumably, because you're here now, the talk we'd scheduled for tonight was sort of vaguely listed under the title Women Fighting Racism in Toronto, I think is what it says. And the speaker was listed as the Women's Coalition Against Racism and Police Violence. Most of you have probably heard of the coalition or participated in some of the actions that they had last year. Maybe you saw Sophia Cook speak at International Women's Day rally at Convocation Hall. The two speakers that we have tonight are both members of the coalition. Doreen Fallingdal Silversmith is on my far left. She's a member of the Lower Cayuga Nation of the Iroquois Confederacy. She's a poet and a short story writer. She's had some of her work published. She has a story in the most recent anthology from the Women's Press, I think. And she's a founding member of the Women's Coalition Against Racism and Police Violence and the Indigenous Women's Coalition. She's a longtime Native activist and freedom fighter. Barb Taylor, sitting beside her on my left. Barb's also a member of the coalition. She's a woman of Irish descent, and she's a longtime activist for women's rights, poor people's rights. And she's going to speak first. I think we'll have both speakers, and then we'll open the floor to questions. Okay, Barb?
Do I need that? Or?
No, you can move the lectern if you want it or not.
Okay, I guess originally when the Women's Coalition agreed to do this forum, we were hot in the middle of all kinds of things last year. And since Lesbian and Gay Pride Day last summer, we've been on holidays because basically we all got really burnt out, and among other things. But so what we thought, though, is that we should give you an update on the different cases we've worked on and tell you where they're at and encourage you to go out and support different women whose cases are still happening around Toronto. So I'm going to do that and tell you a little bit about what the coalition did do, and then Doreen's going to speak about the situation in Oka and how that's related to our work here in Toronto. So the coalition started almost just over a year ago after Sophia Cook, a young black woman, had been shot by a police officer as she sat in her car, in a car. And what we did at that time is over 40 groups got together and organized the coalition because we were so outraged by what had happened. And the first thing we did was organize a benefit for Sophia, which took place last November. And at the same time, we organized a series of pickets at the police headquarters, the new police headquarters at College and Bay Street, demanding that the constable who shot her be charged with attempted murder. Is that right? No, I mean... yeah, that's right. So we started out doing that and organizing support for Sophia, right? And then what happened was as we held our meetings, more and more women started coming forward and saying, listen, something similar has happened to me, right? And I need the support of other women, too. There was women going to court, women fighting human rights cases. So the next case that we started working on was that of Kay Poon, a Chinese woman, a nurse about 50 years old. What happened to her, she was going on for her lunch break from work at the Queen Street Mental Health Center, and she was pulled over for a traffic violation and subsequently beaten up by the cops. Then she was charged with assaulting the police. So many of us followed her case through the courts, went to the court with her, gave her support, and she won. The charges against her were dropped, right? Now she's still pursuing the case and trying to get justice, you know, for these false charges being levied against her. So that's another case. One case that's going on right now, in fact, this week there's going to be... a session in court is that of Yvonne Taylor. Now her situation was very similar to Kay's. She was driving up in the city of North York or York, was it?
Scarborough.
And she was pulled over for a traffic violation. She's a black woman, a nurse as well. No, a real estate agent, sorry. And what happened? What happened was she was assaulted by the cops. She had a tooth knocked out and all these other things. And then what happened was she was charged with assaulting the police officer. So we've been to a number of court dates for her as well, where, you know, they put the date off, trying to discourage people from going out and supporting her. Well, the charges against her are coming up this Wednesday, October 3rd at 9 a.m. at the court at Eglinton and Warden. And we really encourage everybody to go out and support her, as many people as possible. And then what happened was, that's the charges that the police have laid against her. Now, the charges that she's laid against the police, that's not set until next year. So, and then what happened the day we went up to find out when that cop's court case was going to be, they had told her and everybody else, this is going to be on at 10 o'clock in the morning. So we all go up there at 10 o'clock. Well, what happens, they did it at 9 in the morning when nobody was there, right? So this is just an example of how the courts are working against people. Then another case we're working on is that of Marta Calderon. Marta's a Salvadorian woman, and what happened to her just happened a couple of months ago. She was assaulted in the laundry room of an apartment building. She went to defend herself, and what happened was the police laid charges against her for assaulting the man involved. So what happened was she had to get a lawyer and push to get charges laid against that man, right? Now, a similar thing has happened as with Yvonne, where there has been no date set yet for the man who assaulted her. But yet, she's gone to court already several times and, in fact, was held in the West Detention Center for over a week when this originally happened. You know, well, a lot of women were really working hard to get her out of the West Detention Center, right? So November 30th is the date, just for a set date, to set the date for her trial at Old City Hall in Toronto. So once again, we encourage people to go out there and watch in the newspapers for when her case is going to come up, like the actual trial, and also for the man that she's laid charges against. The coalition spent a lot of time going to court, providing support for these different women. The thing is, there's so many cases, right, and it's really necessary for a lot of groups to work on these kind of things. There was, you know, many groups involved in the coalition, women's assault centers, the Korean Women's Collective, the Black Women's Collective, over 40 groups, right? So from the court cases, we also went on to give a submission to the Standing Committee on Justice at Queen's Park. Now, what that was all about was there was an amendment going on to the Police Act via Bill 107 in the legislature last spring. What we were fighting for was a community-based committee that would investigate the police, as opposed to the way it's set up right now, where the police investigate themselves. So say where a cop shoots somebody or commits a crime, it's the police investigating the police, right? Well, we feel that that's really ridiculous because all kinds of factors coming into play, like sexism and racism, the police just don't, you know, consider these things or how other police officers are motivated in those ways. What happened was we went down to Queen's Park and we demonstrated, and we were turfed out of Queen's Park, basically, out of the gallery, yes. And we presented a petition with thousands of names on it, you know, to get changes to this police bill, to no avail, really. Although we did find that there was a lot of public support for what we were trying to push for, and there was a lot of other groups pushing for this too, like the Black Action Defense Committee, the Chinese Canadian National Council, and many other groups as well. The one event we do have coming up, and it deals with the case of another woman, is going to be in November. It's supporting the case of Mary Pitawanakwat. Mary is an Ojibwe woman who lives in Regina, and she's fighting a human rights case against her boss, who was the Secretary of State. Basically, she was fired after having to go through a lot of sexual and racial harassment from her boss. This case has been going on for a long time now, and so we decided we wanted to organize a benefit for her. And that's going to be on November 3rd, Saturday, at St. Paul's Church. And actually, performing will be poets Doreen Silversmith, Christos from Seattle, and Beth Brandt from the States as well. So we encourage you all to come out to that. Mary and other women need a lot of money to help with all these court cases and lawyers and whatnot. Yeah, so that's basically what the coalition has done. I just thought I'd lay that out and remind you that the case for Yvonne Taylor is this Wednesday morning. And watch for the ones coming up for Marta and Kay Poon and Sophia Cook as well. And also, I should just mention that Constable Devigny, who was charged in the shooting of Leslie Donaldson, his trial is coming up on October 15th. And just to note as well, that case took 2 years to come to trial. So that's basically the background on the coalition, and I'll turn it over to Doreen now.
Good evening. The name of that book that where my short story is published in is called Dyke Words. And I go under the pseudonym of Two Feathers when I'm writing these stories and other related issues because I'm not out to my family yet, so I thought I'd just tell you that. The whole situation that Gunasadagi and Ganabagi is a prime example of police and army violence and racism, except it's on a larger scale and is publicly condoned by the Quebec government, provincial government, the government of Canada, and by some members of the Canadian public. Before the crisis at Gunasadagi and Ganabagi, we had the Meech Lake Accord to contend with, you know, where 11 overrated white male politicians sat behind closed doors to decide your future while excluding Native people from that package. But they never counted on Elijah Harper to kill it. While racism and violence has always been present towards our people in this patriarchal society, we can't help but think that the use of the army, police, and public violence against the Mohawks in Quebec are a backlash for the failure of the Meech Lake Accord. On the surface, it looks like the son of a bitch, Marcel Lemay, died for the proposed expansion of a golf course. It runs so much deeper than that. What I'm talking about here is the government's capitalist greed. That's what he died for. It's not clear who shot that officer, but the Sûreté Quebec police and other police associations across Canada are implying that the Mohawks are guilty of this crime, even though no one has been charged yet. I've asked Barb to pass these ads around that the police, they've taken ads out in prominent newspapers proclaiming this. They said the Sûreté never returned any gunfire. Well, there is evidence that the Quebec police did return fire. Even some members of their own force have spoken out and said that they did, in fact, return fire. There were women and children behind those barricades. The evidence is also on the trees in the pine forest where there are bullet holes. They go on to say that the barricades disrupted the lives and threatened the peace and stability of tens of thousands of law-abiding citizens we are sworn to protect. The barricades did this? Get real. What about the SQ and the government tactics of sending in the troops to terrorize the residents of Gunasadagi and Ganewaki? If those police forces oppose terrorism, then why did they and the army go in and beat up women, children, and the Mohawk men? During the siege, the army and police stormed the longhouse, the sacred spiritual heart of our tradition, and beat up women as they prepared a meal. This was on a pretext of looking for weapons. One woman was taken to hospital with a fractured cheekbone, and others suffered severe bruising as a result of this coward attack. Why did the army and police stand by idly when a racist mob in Shadowgate stoned women, children, and elderly men who were leaving the Ganawagi Reserve? One man died of a heart attack 2 days later as an indirect result of this. Why did the army use tear gas on a group of Mohawks a couple of weeks ago? Why did the army and police throw women and children to the ground and rough them up as they were leaving the Oka barricade? Why was a woman thrown into a razor wire fence and cut over her body? Why are the Mohawks in SQ custody being severely beaten? And these police associations say they oppose terrorism? Then what the hell is that? The government and the police are all the same, and it is very difficult for us to trust them. The Prime Minister went into hiding when this crisis began. When he finally emerged from his coma at the beginning of August, this is what he had to say. I believe our native peoples have not been well treated by Canada and Canadians. Heck, that boy's in the wrong country. His statement also reeks of paternalism. And we take strong exception to people like him referring to us as our native peoples. We are a distinct society, and this is the land we lived on and cared for so beautifully long before the Europeans arrived, and we still continue to care for it beautifully despite what other people do with the pollution. You don't hear us walking around saying, "Our Europeans," or "Our Irish," or whatever. We refer to you as our neighbors or coexistents. During the siege, the Prime Minister also stated, "Racism in any form is intolerable." So why was the racist violence allowed to happen then at Shadowgate? I'm of course referring to the stoning. He went on to say, "The laws of Canada must be respected by all. There are no two sets of laws that govern Native people and the rest of Canada." It's quite clear that there are two sets of laws, one to mistreat Native people in the judicial system. A prime example is that the Donald Marshall case, the Mi'kmaq Native man from Nova Scotia, who spent 11 years in jail for a crime he didn't commit. And do you really believe that these Mohawks will get a fair trial when they've already been convicted by the public? And also there's the other set of law governs the police, army, and people like the racist mob in Shadowgate. After the siege was over at Gunasadagi, Indian Affairs Minister Tom Siddon came out of the bushes clapping his hands and talked about victory. Where the hell was he for most of this crisis? Maybe if we were good little Indians, he can give us more platitudes and hollow promises. We have no faith that the government will follow through on their recent promises for speedy land claim settlements, improved housing, and so on. We won't believe this until we see it. They've made those promises before. On the reserve, we have hardly any plumbing. My mother just got her plumbing in just this past summer, and this is 1990. And the Prime Minister once again praised the Army for its handling of the Oka dispute. He said, in the end, firmness and patience and concern for human life have carried the day in a very explosive situation. He gave himself a pat on the back while addressing more than 500 police officers from around the world. The word firmness can only be taken as his ruling of this country by a dictatorial iron fist. Patience? Why was the army immediately sent in when he couldn't handle the crisis? He has a lot to learn about patience from us. We have been patient with this colonial regime now for nearly 500 years. Both the Prime Minister and Robert Bourassa are guilty of spreading anti-Native hysteria. The government has a long track record of broken promises and human rights violations and so much more. And another damn thing, the racist paternalistic act needs to be completely overhauled or deleted. We don't need these bureaucratic babysitters. They're not very good. They've ignored us for too long. They could be charged with neglect. And we're sick and tired of their bureaucratic white tape. And I went to Oka first time July 29th, and it was a big rally in the John Sovey Park, about 5 kilometers from the actual barricade. And I found that there were a lot of support there for Native people, so the support is there. And the second time around, I went to the peace camp in the same park, and I seen things that I never saw before in my life. I saw tanks going by, army trucks, and military helicopters flying all around us. I never saw that before in my life. And I was just appalled at the way they were carrying on with this show of macho force. And it's similar to what the Prime Minister did by sending those ships to the Persian Gulf. It's just a show of macho force. And also a smokescreen. This was so many billions of dollars that he spent on this smokescreen, whereas it could have been used to help Native people or perhaps the women's programs. And so getting back to the Oka situation, I was just so angry. I'm no longer bitter about this thing. I had to deal with this all of my life. I'm no longer bitter. I have passed that stage. I'm just very angry. And I think that we have to keep fighting this. If we give up, then I don't think we'll have anything. And I wanted to talk briefly about the Kondole chiefs. We have a chief in our family as well. And these are the hereditary chiefs. And I'm not talking about the war chiefs or anything. That's long ago, and that's done away with, and so are the warriors. So these people that call themselves warriors, well, you know, like we don't have them anymore. Maybe they should choose another name. But because we buried the hatchets a long time ago in the great pine forest, like the pine tree, until the Europeans arrived. And then people start getting angry again and bringing out the weapons. Only this time it was with the white man's weapons, like guns and stuff. And I'm traditional Longhouse, and I find it very difficult at times. Sometimes I'm torn because my elders tell me to be peaceful. But how can I be peaceful when all this is going on? So this is where I'm torn. And they say this land belongs to nobody, it belongs to the Creator. He created it. And everything that we have here is for our use, to share and care about each other. But unfortunately, the government and some people don't see it that way. But we do recognize the capitalist greed of the government and some people. And so this is where I'm finding it very difficult to because I'm traditional Longhouse, and it's very difficult what my elders are telling me and what I hear in the Longhouse. Be peaceful. And I just wish the government would see it that way, but unfortunately they don't. And this thing is, I think that the standoff at Gunawaki and Gunnisadagi is similar to the Stonewall Rebellion in New York. Is everybody familiar with the Stonewall Rebellion? The Stonewall Rebellion is about some gay people who were raided in a bar and charged and so on. And but on a larger scale, like this set the scale for gay people coming out and protesting the violence against gays. While the people in Gunnisadagi and Gunawagi set the stage for our people, it's acting as a catalyst for more protests across this country. That's already happening. You haven't seen anything yet. And so I think there's more protests to come across this country, and some may be violent. I cannot guarantee that it wouldn't be. People in my generation, the younger ones, they're very impatient and very angry with this government's would they been ignoring us for too long, and we're not taking it anymore, and we're going to come out and protest some more. And if it leads to a civil war, then so be it. And I'd like to end this by reciting one of my poems for you. It's called Iroquois Freedom Fighter. My spirit is crying for my people's stolen freedom, and my soul is feeling restless and troublesome. My heart is impaled by the lofty alien nation. I lean to left wing for a viable solution. I'm an Iroquois freedom fighter with a score to settle, and I won't succumb to defeat without a fierce struggle. Thank you.
Maybe before I open it up to questions, maybe either Barbara or Doreen, one of you can maybe mention some of the organizing that's happening in Toronto around the stuff in Oka. there anything people should know about?
Well, the one thing that's been going on for a long time is the vigil at Queen's Park, and it's still happening. I don't know, do most people here know about it? Some people do? Okay, if you're interested in finding out what's going on, you just go down to Queen's Park, and on the front lawn is a peace vigil. And usually the people down there know what's going on, if there's going to be a rally or anything like that, right? And I would imagine now there's going to be some organizing around the court cases, and there's going to have to be a lot of money raised to help everybody in their defense. And there is a defense fund. We have an address here if you want to make a donation. You could send it in, right? Next weekend, Elijah Harper and George Erasmus of the Assembly of First Nations are going to be speaking in Toronto as well. So you can check the newspaper, right, to find out where and when that's going to be.
Does anybody have any questions?
Just another announcement that there's a Mohawk Defense Fund that the Red and Rose Credit Union.
Yeah, she's writing it down. Can you keep it? It's not a dark enough pen.
Oh,
all right.
You can
maybe
find
we can
written
just pass
out
this around.
Okay.
People can write it down.
Can you talk a bit about the dilemma of supporting the warriors? Or is it normal? Something you said and thinking it might be.
Well, some people, especially the traditional longhouse, because of what I told you, that there are few, like, there's no warriors anymore. And they're just saying, oh, they're just out, you know, looking to cause trouble. And they don't necessarily, because the elders are more or less like peaceful in that. And but the younger generation are becoming more educated in this white man's world. And so they're seeing where all these people are, you know, the government's really screwing us around, like jerking us around. So, and we're more impatient, like we want a better future. Women warriors? I've seen a few.
Are young people being sent away for their education, or are they getting their education in any good?
Well, the...
They're all sent away somewhere.
Oh yeah, that was to the... You think you're talking about the residential schools? That's another issue. We have elementary school from grade 1 to 8, and we have to go off to reserve to high school and post-secondary educational institutions.
What's traditional longhouse?
Traditional longhouse, I guess yours is, you know, it's similar to, you know, you worship your higher power in your church, if in fact you do go to church. But, okay, so it's similar to that, but we don't have a Bible. We don't go by the Bible, we go by the law of Skunadayo, Handsome Lake, and his teachings.
Rome's the hatchet
thief. It was a long ago.
Like a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Is it written down or so?
The stories are oral. We're oral people. And it's passed down from one generation to the other. And the same in the longhouse, when we have the ceremonies, it's all oral. It's all oral, and that's why I have difficulty writing down something and reading it to you.
I was wondering if you had heard anything about children going back to school this fall, those going off the reserve and having been to go maybe for the first time to high schools where there would be not just Indigenous peoples, but a mixture. And then confronting...
can you speak up, please?
Sorry. confronting... violence from other students in the school that could be traced back to the ways in which there have been negative reactions to what has gone on at Olka.
I heard that some parents were against the students coming back, the Aboriginal students coming back, and but then they were folded down, and so then they agreed to let the students back in the schools again. But I haven't heard if there were any violence or anything towards these kids. Although a small child beside her mother said that she would stone the native children if they came back. A small child, about 6 years old, said this, you know, and her mother standing there going, big smile on her face, you know. It was sick. So I haven't heard anything whether or not there was any violent reaction to this. They proposed, the Iroquois Confederacy chiefs proposed peaceful solutions to this crisis, but then it was rejected. They just mainly talk about amongst themselves, like on the reserve. That's what I was hearing a lot when I was on the reserve just recently, my reserve. And they were saying, well, you know, a lot of these warriors are hiding behind label of I'm traditional. They're saying when some of them don't even go to the longhouse, and so yeah, they're angry. They're angry. Yeah. See, when we're angry, you know, you can't hardly tell sometimes. You know,
we were.
Do we have a difference? Well, it's similar to Ganabaki and Ganasatagi. Where the warriors are angry with the elders and the hereditary chiefs especially, and so they're just more or less like ignoring the pleas of the chiefs to stop this violence, and so they're just like, shoving them aside. And even some of the hereditary chiefs, they're on a hit list of the warriors, and so the government just loves that, just infighting. So that's one thing we have to work at.
Labor Day parade here, which had 25,000 people marching, everyone in that march
a red armband because the Metro Labor Council determined that that should be a focus of the day, and people from the Assembly of First Nations led the parade. It got nothing in the news, and there were many demonstrations in Quebec of people supporting the Mohawk Nation and the standing warriors, yet all we got to see was the racist and shadow gate. And it was almost as though there was a tremendous media focus on, well, there was a tremendous media focus on the barricades, but any political support was not being shown up. And I wonder what you see to the future, that as we enter the 90s, and hopefully it'll be a very changed time from the 80s, where political activity will be at a higher level, the possibility of change will be better. But out of what has happened now, and what you said about the fact that it will change the face of Native politics, I suppose, and perhaps the possibility of winning sovereignty and self-determination, do you see the possibility of solidarity and alliances building with trade union movements and other movements to strengthen what's happening? Because obviously the government of Canada, the government of Quebec, or any provincial government is not going to move without an awful lot of pushing. And I wonder what the thoughts are for the future.
I think that there should be solidarity with our supporters, obviously. And especially these groups, and to show that there is solid support out there, which there is, and I think that we should combine our efforts together and hit this thing on like full impact, and to make the government to wake up and listen to us, and what we're saying, and that it's just not a bunch of savages running around and, you know, causing all this trouble. So yeah, I think there is room for allying with other groups as well.
Just heard the clip that Bob Ray has indicated today that there would be self-government during the term. What's your sense, cynicism or a glimmer of possibility?
Cynicism.
Nothing else?
Because I personally met Bob Ray at a meeting, and I found him to be very wimpy, like the rest of the government. Like the rest of the government, and cynicism because of their track record. I mean, he's obviously white, and he's with the government, and we don't trust the government. Do you think we should? You know, we have no reason to trust him.
Seen a lot of public sympathy for what's going on in Oka, but I wonder if you have any thoughts on action locally. I have been shocked to discover that there's a Native housing co-op which was planned for the Jones-Stanforth area, which was totally demolished by the citizens in the area because of it would have been crime to their neighborhood. And is there any kind of action that can be done locally?
Well, probably protests. I think everything starts on a local level, and then you work your way up to these bigger protests, you know, to hit the government. And so every little bit helps, I believe. And so I think probably protests.
I might just add something to what Carolyn was saying before. Maybe people heard about the sort of police violence that was happening with the lesbian and gay community in Montreal in the summer, and I think that's an instance of a bit of solidarity that happened around police violence between Native people and their supporters and lesbians and gay men. There were really large demonstrations of about 2,000, 3,000 people in Montreal that when was it actually? It was sort of in the middle of the summer. I don't know if people remember. But those kind of instances of police violence that we know that happen across the spectrum, and like some of the stuff that Barb was talking about, although the scope and the history.
And what we do have is braves, and which simply mean young men.
The second question is, I have been without a little bit of experience in the judicial system from the opposite side. I seem to think that there is one law for everybody in this country, but there seem to be two spirits of interpreting the law. One that applies to the white man, and the other that applies to everyone else. It is in this country that the so-called bilingual country, a person of French origin can try in this language, of course. I would like to know what kind of provisions you people are making for your local university to try in the court. Are you asking for a court when you can speak in your own language, where you can have your own title from some citizen and constitution to a native judge?
The thing is, there aren't many native judges in this country or lawyers. And my opinion is that if I were ever charged, I would plead that in my native language, I would plead that I don't speak English, and get my people to refuse to interpret the Cuga language. No, my opinion is that I think that there should be more native judges handling these cases, because we don't get fair trials, as I said. And we have native court workers that go to court with these native people, and I'm not sure what is happening with the Mohawks at this time. Like their situation when they're in custody and so on. Does that answer your question?
Well, it does partially answer the question, but what are you trying to do? What can you do? Are you fighting for some system? There will be native judges and native crown prosecutors, and there will be lawyers around. What I've seen is that more people will be hired. Doesn't seem to be native people.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me wonder what happened. Why can't we get...
Well, I just got done telling you that there's not enough native judges and lawyers and prosecutors.
Well,
just similar, there's hardly any native doctors. I don't know one. Do you?
No, I know the Ombudsman of Ontario.
Yeah. But she can't go to the court and defend them.
Well, so I don't know how useful it would be for native
white law,
I don't know if that would work any. Like,
but you're trying
to write law, so because of... No, yeah, I guess, but... You know, but once you're studying that law, then you have to somehow believe that it's going to work. And if you have to have some faith that it works if you're going to study it or want to be a lawyer.
No, but you don't have faith. I'm saying you don't have faith that it works, okay? Therefore, given that what it is,
But that's the whole problem. I mean, a native judge would sit there and mm-hmm. say, by the laws of Canada, what happened at Oka, all of the native people struggling there with arms should be imprisoned. That's what a native judge would have to rule within Canadian law. That's what the whole thing about what Mulroney was blabbing for the past 2 months about, you know, there are not two laws, there's only one Canadian law, and everybody has to be punished equally, supposedly.
I don't know how this law is going to solve the problem. Do you have an alternative? Well, I think it's hard about an alternative. an alternative to love?
Well, I think along the lines of what Doree's talking about in terms of protest, I go further with civil disobedience. I think the Mohawks did a good job with arms. I think a lot of things other than, I'm just saying that we shouldn't hold our breath and put all of our energy into that area, because I don't think that, I think the area is, that law is fundamentally, foundationally screwed. And if we start from that premise that it's fundamentally racist, it's fundamentally sexist, it's fundamentally classist, and I don't, perhaps like some things, I'm not saying we should stop completely putting our energy into trying to get things done in law, but, and to his question, I was referring specifically in terms of Canadian white kind of law, and another kind of law that would look at the situation more fairly for what it should, how it should be looked at. You know, it's like, that's what I'm trying to say. I mean, I don't know. I mean, and maybe I never had to think about a language in terms of courts, because I'm English and I'm white, and if I ever had to go to court, I couldn't pretend to not speak English, or I never had to think about that side of it, so maybe I should.
Is there anything in long natural tradition that has some kind of controlling influence over the community? Any kind of consensus relationship that would lead to a tribal kind of justice?
Tribal kind of justice? They've been trying that, trying to get that for through self-government to where the elders set out the penalties for people who commit crimes. But so far it hasn't worked because the government won't go for that yet, for self-government. So, and the elders would... instead of punishment, the elders would counsel the person who committed a crime. And the Iroquois Confederacy, it's ran by consensus, so it would be a group decision.
Last call for questions. Okay. And when you use the word elder, is that in the type of sense, I mean, you're thinking of male and female elders?
Yeah, male and female.
Are there any provinces that seem to be handling native issues, native rights, better than other provinces? Like obviously Quebec doesn't have a very good record, but I'm just considering, is the West better than the East, or is there any comparison?
The question was whether any of the provinces are handling native issues better than other provinces.
I think it's bad all over, and that's why there's protests all over. And I don't think that we've gotten anything that we've asked for or requested from the government. And so I think it's bad all over. That's why otherwise these native people right across this country wouldn't be supporting their native sisters and brothers in Gunasadaki and Ganiwagi.
This is just a comment, and I really hesitate to speak up because I know close to nothing about this. I hesitate to speak up because I know close to nothing about this, but I did hear, I caught like a part of a program on the radio where three lawyers that all had very different positions, in the sense of they were positioned in society differently. For all I know, they were all white male lawyers, but they were very sympathetic to the Aboriginal cause, and in fact had been studying ways in which Canadian law, if law and order was to be imposed, would have to, by its own law, grant self-government to the First Nations, to Aboriginal peoples, and so on. Now, you know, I hesitate to bring this up because I really am very ignorant about this. It's just that I heard three lawyers that seemed to be arguing that there was already in, like, clauses in some kind of Canadian law, some kinds of agreements, some kinds of treaties, whatever, that actually would already
if now, you know, now law and order were to be imposed, grant some large degree, if not grant, self-government, so that, like, it would be impossible now to be trying the Mohawks under some law other than, you know,
are you talking about sovereignty?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I tell you that a treaty is, the treaty so far hasn't been recognized, so it's no good if it's not recognized. So we have to get recognition of our rights first before I think that we can go to self-government. That's the important thing first. So what's a treaty then if the government doesn't recognize it? I'm sorry, can you be more specific for your question? You're saying a lot there, but... I think it's quite valid because when the Women's Coalition speak against racism and police violence, and we usually connect these things to other issues like because we're asked by many other groups like the abortion issue, we connect these things all together. So I think it's quite valid to be connecting these things together. And when I spoke against violence against women at Take Back the Night March, I also drew a parallel between the violence against the women in Toronto and the violence against the Native people in Gunnawagi and Gunnazadagi. It's quite valid to do that, yeah. And I think it's also important to see that the mainstream media is, some members can be quite racist and print inaccuracies. It can be sexist, classist. The Toronto Sun is a prime example of that. And so you should maybe listen to radio stations like CKLN or something. That's just an example.
It seems to me if there was a victory this summer, it was through the media that the stand in Oka, it was the media that presented those issues to people like many of my friends who had never, ever considered any of those issues before, who have come out of the summer with a far greater understanding, various levels of support ranging the whole spectrum, in terms of support and at least understanding of the Aboriginal position, where it didn't exist before. And that's mainstream, you know, people who are involved in exposed to the mainstream media. So regardless really of the positions taken by the media, that I think has happened. That's real.
Other questions? A stupid comment?
Everything hasn't come out, so an Indian woman. Benefits of the Mohawk in St. Paul's Trinity this past Friday, and you know, they want to have a trial now. I don't know what the big crime was against. Yes, they have a brotherhood, and they want to get the Indians to kill their brother or whatever. But the Indian woman said that you know, all the men were praying, I guess, being peace type thing. I think it's only the women and children that bear kids. And the SQ started shooting rubber bullets. Some that they found went in 5 inches into graves, could have killed anyone who had been hit. And it was a miracle no one was dead. And it was only when the men, the warriors, heard the gunshot that they went out to defend the women and the children of America. And one cop was shot, and there's still evidence that he was shot by his own men. Who knows? And even if he was shot by the warriors, there would have been hundreds of women and children who would have been killed. And it'll be interesting to see how things develop in the media and the trial, I guess, because they're labeled terrorists, and I guess maybe they should claim status of political prisoners, not as mere criminals, like in Ireland, and see what kind of support networks develop, because if they punish a few Indians, I wouldn't want that to happen. I think everyone is in it together, and they shouldn't just punish either. I mean, if I was there, I would let a brother or sister go to jail, you know, without fighting it. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should draw it to a close. But I'd really very much like to thank Doreen and Barb for coming and sharing all this with us and for handling some, in the end, particularly quite difficult questions. So thank you very much, all of you.